This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
What is up, Straight Fire fam? It's me, Jason McIntyre. This is Straight Fire for Thursday, November 18th. We have a special guest today. Not much of a pod from a take perspective. Not a lot of great stories happening in sports. I personally had a pretty great Wednesday, if you do ask. I took my buddy Dan, who is a regular listener of the podcast, has hyped up this boxing class, his boxing gym near us. He's like, oh yeah, you know, your guy Leinart goes there and some other wives of NBA players, and like, hey, it's big time. You got to check it out. So I reluctantly check it out. And of course, I'm going to be super hurting all day today. I woke up sore as hell, and I know I'm just going to be just regretting it. But it was an awesome workout. Then I played some hoops. I had some family time at night. It was just an all-around great Wednesday. And for your entertainment, I got Brian Windhorst, the legend who covers the NBA. Yeah, he's a legend. I mean, he's been at ESPN for like 15 years. He's written bestseller books. He's got a podcast. He's one of the guys who shapes NBA coverage for ESPN. And we talk about everything. Lakers struggles. Yes, LeBron Westbrook. But just like all around the league, interesting stuff. And we're trying to get on things before they happen. And just keep a close ear to a couple things. You know, he can't always go all in. But he can kind of hint at things that may be coming down the pike. So it's really fun midweek NBA discussion. Enjoy Brian Windhorst. At the end of the pod, I have a best bet for Thursday Night Football. And if you remember, the direct hit, that was Monday Night Football. I don't know if I can guarantee another victory, but I can guarantee giving you a gross bet that you have to make. But first, here's Brian Windhorst from ESPN.
You know a guy.
Jason likes to think he knows everything when it comes to sports.
I know what sports fans want.
But for everything he doesn't, he knows a guy who does.
Let's just say I know a guy who knows a guy who knows another guy.
All right, let's welcome back to Straight Fire one of the more popular NBA guests we have. We try to bring him on every year, twice if time permits, because he's such a huge deal. New York Times best-selling author. I think he might be neighbors with Warren Buffett. This guy's
Jimmy
big
Buffett.
Time.
Jimmy Buffett. I used to live in Miami, and I was neighbors with Jimmy, and then I moved to Omaha, and I'm neighbors with Warren.
Brian Windhorst, the legend from ESPN. He's got a great podcast. Before we started recording, I was asking about some of the people that he hosts it with. I won't talk about that here, but he's got a good podcast on the NBA. I don't listen to any NBA podcast, really, except his, because he's plugged in as much as anybody. And Brian, first of all, how are you doing? And second, are you excited for the holidays?
I'm fine and not really. I mean, the holidays after you're a kid.
Yeah.
It's sort of something you have to do. I'm excited to be around family. That's good. You have a new appreciation for that.
Will you have to go to NBA games on Christmas Day?
No, I gave that up years ago.
Smart.
I did it for like maybe 7 or 8 consecutive Christmases.
Mm.
And then you reach a point where you're like, all right, I've done that.
Yeah,
I can move on from that.
The games are exciting, I get it, but I'd rather be with my family. And now you got a little kid at home, so you got to spend time with the fam. NBA, Brian, this always happens with the league. The first week or two, there's this huge pop. The league is back. Oh my gosh, it's awesome. And then there's, you know, kind of recedes. Okay, we got 82 games. Let's pace ourselves. And right around Christmas, there's the reemergence of the NBA. But I'm going to say, based on some of the stuff we've seen early, it feels like there's a little more juice to the league right now, namely the Milwaukee Bucks sputtering big time, LeBron not playing for the Lakers, this Zion Williamson disaster in New Orleans. I talked a little bit about last week, the Minnesota Timberwolves and Carl Anthony Towns. It sounds like there's some issues there. Where would you like to start the pod today? We could talk about the Atlanta Hawks, those frauds in the East. I don't know. Ben Simmons?
All these teams, you're talking about all these teams that are underachieving. What about the Golden State Warriors?
Ah, yes. They are at the top of my
incredible.
List.
Incredible. What about the Washington Wizards? I mean, you're looking at all of the downsides, all of the struggles.
Debbie Downer here midweek. But all right, fine. Let's talk about the Warriors. Number one in offense.
Yeah, well, you know, the league sort of yields to the NFL. You know,
yes.
they have a big kickoff opening week, and then they don't really have many marquee games until Christmas.
Yeah.
And so you have, like, you know, the Warriors, who are one of the biggest draws. I still think ratings wise, I still think they're number one.
Yep.
Despite the Lakers and despite the injuries. I still think that the Warriors are the number one draw. And so, you know, they have like an 8-game homestand early in the season where there's not exactly a lot of big name teams that come in there. I mean, they ended up playing the Bulls in there, which ended up being a big game. Mm-hmm. but it wasn't because the schedule makers thought it would be. And so they just don't play that many big games. You know, this week they had Nets Warriors. That was a big game. But they just stay away from it. And now they've even given up Thursday nights. They, you know, TNT isn't doing their premium product on Thursday night. They're doing it on Tuesday night because they don't want to fight with the NFL. And I wonder, the NFL is playing more and more games on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Already last year, the NBA took its premium. You know, usually the premium game was in the 5 o'clock Eastern hour. Mm-hmm. They pushed it later to avoid the NFL. And this year, Christmas is on Saturday, on a Saturday. And there's a bunch of more NFL games. Like there used to be just one, and I think there's multiple now. Mm-hmm. The NBA is like, that's they're taking the NFL's taking over their corner there.
They the NBA can't do anything. They can't. There's no point in even trying, right?
Right. Well, that's what the thing. They're yielding. They're yielding to it, which is why the league, which is again why after the bubble, after the, you know, the pandemic, they thought, hey, let's start on Christmas. We'll start the league on Christmas. To avoid the NFL, but that didn't really work either. So the NFL's got the NBA in full retreat. You know, they're taking some of their corners, but that's not what you asked. You know,
I love a good ramble to start, Brian. That's good.
Sorry. The reason the Warriors are fascinating, Jason, is that they're really good. And now they're good partially because of their schedule, but obviously that win they had in Brooklyn was a statement win. But they have the ability to get better as the season goes along. So Clay and James Wiseman, we think, will come back. Yeah. There's a possibility that they can make a trade. That's a difficult, long, hard to see question just yet, but they have the pieces to make a trade. You look at other teams out there. Yeah. I mean, if Kyrie comes back, the Nets are going to get better. But the other teams out there who are competing with them don't have the same capability to improve.
Mm.
And so like the Lakers, you know, let's say they get LeBron back and go on a big win streak and, you know, are biting at the Warriors' heels in 8-10 weeks. They don't have much they can do to improve their roster. They kind of got what they got. Maybe they can get a buyout guy or something. So that's where the Warriors are so fascinating, is that there's room for them to improve.
I don't know. 12-2, number one offense, number one defense in terms of efficiency. And just the words, they could make a trade, hit your lips. That seems a little odd to me. Is that a Ben Simmons thing? Or like, what? Why would they need to improve?
I mean, I just think, you know, when you want to win the championship, you want to make sure you have the best team possible to win. And so, you know, I'm sure this is something that they're going to talk about. Like, do we want to use some upcoming draft picks or a young player or two to go out and get one more piece? Maybe they get to February and they're like, yeah, we don't need it. We have a championship team here now. Maybe Clay comes back and like looks really good and they're like, okay, we're good. But I'm going to just, you know, regardless of what they do, even if it's into next year, they have maneuverability next summer, you know, where they can improve their roster. So I just think that the Warriors, after sort of taking 2 years to, you know, to sort of lay in the gutter, so to speak, although they did make the play-in round last year, you know, they've come roaring back and they're in great position.
Yeah. Now just to put it in perspective, you know, we're about 1/6 of the way through the season. I did some math and it's early on a Wednesday, but I did some math and that's the equivalent of like 3 games in the NFL. So everybody who was crowing about like the Carolina Panthers and your Denver Broncos, Brian, 3-0 to start the season, like that's gone. So this Warriors start could just be heavily based on the schedule, right? Like we shouldn't read too much into this.
Yeah, and they had an 8-game homestand, which an 8-game homestand in any season is rare, anytime, but especially like in October, November. And what that allowed them to do was not only to get a lot of home games where teams are going to win most of them if they're a good team anyway, but it allowed them to practice. Yeah. So you know, if you're going on long road trips, it's hard to practice because you're traveling so much. You're traveling on the off days. You're getting in very late. You can't get really good practice. You can't get good rhythm. So not only did the Warriors have a favorable schedule where they were able to be at home, but they were able for like 2.5 or 3 weeks to be at home and practice. Mm. And so it's almost like they have had they've got a little bit of a jump start on their chemistry and togetherness that other teams would have in mid-November. And so you see that in the way they play. You watch how, and it's granted, it's not like they just started moving the ball on offense yesterday. That's obviously been a part of their team. it's not like Draymond and Steph developed their great two-man game off each other in these last 3 weeks. That's taken, you know, they've been doing that for 7 or 8 years, but it certainly helps. They just look more organized as a team and they look more comfortable. And you look at team, you were talking about a team like the Hawks, who's definitely struggled. That's a team that had to go on a long West Coast trip, like the second or third week of the season, and get their, you know, their teeth kicked in for a week and a half out there on, in the Western road trip, which, by the way, a lot of teams will come out West and get slapped around. A lot of West teams will go East and get slapped around a bit. It's the nature of the NBA. And you all of a sudden look like you're off to a rough start when you have to deal with that road trip right out of the gate. I mean, there's some teams that don't make their big West or first, you know, typically teams make two long trips each year to the other conference. Some teams don't go out for the first time until mid to late December.
When they're rolling. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. All right. So what about a team like the Minnesota Timberwolves, who are 4-9? Anthony Edwards gets all the highlights, has great dunks. He's out there telling Steph, I might go for 50 tonight. And, you know, you start diving a little deeper, Brian. He's shooting 41% from the field, 32 from three. And he's taking more shots than Karl Anthony Towns, who, by the way, is playing, you could argue, this is the best season of his career, player efficiency-wise, three-point shooting. I don't know. I had heard recently that there was some issues in Minnesota. We know Karl Anthony Towns, guy's a little strange, and we know his connection in New York. I don't know. Have you heard anything about the Timberwolves? Anything interesting?
It wasn't good when their general manager got fired in training camp. I mean, that's not a good sign. And quite frankly, you know, Gerson Rosas, he's a nice man, but his judgment, some of the things that he did in running that franchise. I mean, David Kahn is held up as the standard as sort of one of the worst general managers in modern era. And I'm sad to say that you could put a case together for Rosas.
Oh, jeez. Well, and just rewind. The guy you mentioned, he's a former journalist. What's his name again?
David Kahn.
David Kahn. He's the one who drafted Johnny Flynn over Curry, and I think he did Rubio as well, right?
Yeah, he drafted two point guards ahead of Steph Curry. it's always difficult when you draft two point guards in the same draft. But then when you do, when you pass up Curry, Towns has cooled off a little bit, but he's still having a great season. What is interesting is that he's definitely having the best 3-point shooting season of his career, which leads me to believe he should be shooting more of them. But instead he's taking fewer shots than he did last year. He's having a great season and taking fewer shots, and Anthony Edwards is taking about 5 more a game. And, you know, you saw that moment that went viral over the weekend when Anthony Edwards was on the perimeter dribbling in between his legs 13 times. And Towns was so convinced that he was going to shoot that he just started walking back on defense.
Yep.
And he was right. Towns did shoot, and he was right that he missed it and he had to get back on defense. So, you know, when you look at the raw data, the issue is that Towns is getting the ball less even when he's shooting really well. The problem is that Towns really leaned in to Edwards being that draft pick. You know, they could have taken LaMelo Ball, but, you know, Gerson had traded for, at a high cost, had traded for D'Angelo Russell, who has a relationship with Towns. And they didn't want to draft a lead guard to come in and smother Russell. And so after that, last year when the pick was coming to, he had to make the selection. It was actually a year ago right now, Jason. If you
That's
can
right,
believe that.
Yeah.
The draft was like a year ago right about now. I think this week, a year ago this week. They had a choice. You know, do we go for LaMelo? Do we go for... Because you know they weren't going to draft Wiseman because Wiseman obviously plays the same position as Towns. Mm-hmm. And Towns like gave interviews, was like, "Oh, this is the best pick for us," or whatever. So he's married himself to Ant, and so that's where the difficulty comes in. You know, they started the season off 3-1. They had a favorable schedule, but they were playing much better defense. That's gone away. And Towns he's got 2 years at the max left after this. He's tied into the franchise. I think he's just frustrated. He's, you know, at the end of what's happening in fourth quarters, they're the worst fourth quarter team in the league.
Ooh.
I can't believe you want me to talk about the Timberwolves this much. What you really wanted me to do is say that Karl Towns wants to be traded or something like that. That's
I mean, it sounds like he really wants to go to New York. Does he not?
You know, I think Karl is frustrated with the situation. And that frustration, by the way, comes in, like, you see it when you watch him in fourth quarters.
Yeah.
Other teams double team him because they want Edwards to take the shot.
Oh, that's so harsh.
And they don't have schemes set up to take advantage of that. And like, they also don't have, you know, they don't have good point guards, in my opinion. And so they don't have people who know how to get him the ball.
But D'Angelo Russell's not a good point guard, Brian. Come on.
He's okay. He's, you know, you're not going to.
What is he on his fourth team already? Fifth?
You're not going to confuse him with Chris Paul. So my guess is he's pretty frustrated. And like I said, it didn't help that, you know, they hired a coach in the middle of last season, and then the general manager got fired in training camp or right before training camp. That's not something that you're looking for stability in the NBA.
Let's pivot to the Milwaukee Bucks. Giannis opened his mouth to GQ and was like, oh, I chose to stay here even though all the pressure is, it's easier to leave. And I want to pause there, Brian. And a lot of people in the Bucks fan base are angry with me. And again, I don't know if you and I talked about this yet, but I've been saying this for like 5 years. I got to FS1 and I said this when Durant left OKC for Golden State. It is harder for a guy to leave where he's been for 6, 7, 8, 9 years, get hated by that fan base. They burn your jerseys. The people are just bombing you on social media every day for months, weeks, years. Okay. It's harder to leave. And you're not only hated by the fan base you leave, but everyone else hates you. Because you went and loaded up on a team. So this whole Giannis, it's easy to leave. Giannis is loved by everybody for staying. LeBron and KD are hated viscerally. LeBron left Miami like 10 years ago, and he's still hated for that. KD left 5 years ago. He's still hated. Brian, either tell me I'm crazy. I don't mind. You can say that. But the easier decision is to stay.
In some cases, that's possibly true. Yeah, I think each case is different. But I thought they would be reacting to what he said, where he was like, well, you know, I'd stay here for now. This is the place I want to be for now. That was just kind of a scary statement, but
isn't he locked in for like 4 more years? Like what?
Yeah. But he's not allowed to be traded, but in right now under the rules. But I mean, you know, the thing about it is in today's NBA, a contract doesn't mean anything.
Doesn't mean anything at all.
No, because players are demanding trades all the time.
Well, I don't know. Ben Simmons has a contract, and they're not dealing him.
How is it going? Do you think that's a good situation?
I think it's awful, but I love it. It's great for us, right?
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, they're not keeping the player regardless of his contract. So that's the thing. I mean, you have to constantly be maintaining that relationship. It's like, you know, having a superstar like this in these days, it's like having a, it's like having a race car engine, you know, like I've learned so much about Formula One because I watched this Netflix series. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do know what you're talking about, but I've never seen it. I didn't watch it. Yeah. Is it that good?
I mean, I enjoy it. But one of the things that you already know, but one of the things that you really learn about those things go wrong with these cars all the time.
Yeah.
There's like hundreds and hundreds of people working on these cars and things still go wrong. But when they're all calibrated and everything's right, it's like amazing to watch the way they can corner everything like that. And that's kind of what it's like to have a player like LeBron or like Giannis. Like when you have him at full bore, like you watch him in the finals, like, holy moly, what incredible like moments. But you have to constantly making sure that engine is running right. And, you know, the Bucks definitely got an incredible gift from Giannis when he extended before last season. Because he took the pressure off the table of the season going along and people worrying about him being a free agent.
Yeah.
And it ended up helping the team as they had a great season and ended up winning the title. So it worked together. But like that doesn't buy you 5 years. That buys you as much time as Giannis remains happy. And right now he's happy. And so that's a good thing. Yeah. And the team invested in Drew Holiday and invested in Chris Middleton, and they're going to invest probably more money in Dante DiVincenzo, and they're paying the luxury tax and all that stuff. And And they're continuing to keep that engine well oiled, but man, it's fragile. And that interview is just another example of it.
And it might be fragile. I know they don't have Middleton or Lopez, but they're 11th in the East right now. If the playoffs started tomorrow, they don't. The Bucks would be out. Any concerns at all over this clunky start?
Not really. I mean, Giannis missed a few games with a sprained ankle, and Middleton missed, I think, 7 or 8 games with COVID. Lopez has been out, I think, since the first week of the season with a back issue. Drew Holiday had an injury early on. I mean, if all of those guys are banged up, yeah, they're going to be in trouble. Mm. But if they have to have them healthy to compete to win the championship again anyway, I'm not. There's a bunch of other teams to keep an eye on before you have to worry about them.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Let's get positive for a moment. I grew up in the Northern Virginia area. The Washington Bullets at the time were fun when they had Chris Webber and a couple other dudes. Never really broke through. I thought the Gilbert Arenas years were okay. The Beal Wall years were okay, but they're pretty damn good right now. What's the better story, the Wizards atop the East or the Bulls right on their heels?
Yeah, you know, both of them, the Bulls haven't been to the playoffs in like 5 years, mm-hmm. and it's such a legacy market. And, you know, that's a fascinating team to, I'm really, they've done such a really good job of plugging the players that they signed in. And having them be like, you look at the way they're using Lonzo Ball, it works. You look at the way they're using DeMar DeRozan, it really works. He's having a career season so far. You look at the way they're using Alex Caruso, it really works. They're, you know, sometimes we see guys get signed and they come into a new situation and it doesn't work. And, you know, they did a lot of work as they put that team together, a lot of preparation, and it's really paid off. And they've actually had injuries, you know, you know, one of their leading bench scorers, Kobe White, has been out all year. Kobe White. And then Patrick Williams, who's one of their most important defensive players. He's out for the season with a wrist injury. So, you know, they've had some adversity and still done it. But, you know, Washington, that trade that they made with the Lakers is a fascinating trade.
Yes,
it is. Fascinating, fascinating trade. It could end up being a sliding doors moment. I don't know, because, you know, for the Lakers, because they could have gone a whole different path. But here's what you had to realize. 2 years ago, the Wizards were a very average team with an enormous payroll. And they had a new general manager and they've had a new coach. And they had John Wall, who had back-to-back bad injuries, not quite as bad as Klay Thompson, but he had surgery on his heel. And so he was going to miss like most of the season. And then while he was recovering from that injury, he slipped in the shower and tore his Achilles.
That's right. I'm sorry for laughing at that. That's not funny.
So it was like, they basically lost 2 seasons of him, and they come back. He's got this enormous contract and they're like, oh my God, how are we going to get out of this situation? And not only have they gotten out of it, they made 2 trades, one to get Westbrook and one to get rid of Westbrook. And in those 2 trades, they've cleaned up their salary books. They've put together a team that is young and definitely fun to watch. I don't know if it's a contender, but if you're a Wizards fan, you have to be really pleased and excited about the way this team is playing. And they've done, I mean, they had to trade away 1 first-round pick to trade Wall, but then they got a 1st-round pick back when they flipped Westbrook. And in the interim season, they did make the playoffs. It wasn't like they had a 15-win season. You know, I don't think that it was, you know, it wasn't like acquiring LeBron in his prime. It wasn't getting LeBron and Wade to sign, but that's a pretty good management of a roster. And, you know, Brad Beal is still there and committed. He hasn't asked to jump ship yet, you know? I mean, so, and if you keep him, he can be a free agent this summer. If you keep him, you will have done a really wonderful thing, which is why that literally today, Tommy Shepard, their general manager, got promoted and got a contract extension.
Interesting.
Because he's done such a good job. And so, you know, I don't necessarily, you know, Kyle Kuzma and, you know, KCP, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and and Montrezl Harrell. Like, that's not exactly the core of a dynasty.
But jeez, that's harsh.
If you looked at some of the guys that they were playing in that rotation last year, some of the guys they were giving real minutes to are like either not in the NBA or on the end of the benches now. It's a pretty good story. It gives hope to anybody.
So real quick on Chicago, you know what I noticed last year? I mean, it wasn't just me. I'm sure other people saw it, but Thibodeau ran Julius Randle into the ground. I think he was like top three in minutes or whatever. And it really worked. They really played heavy minutes for their best players in the regular season, maximized it, and they, you know, got to the playoffs. If you look at the top 20 players for minutes per game, Brian, three Chicago Bulls are in there. They are really riding those guys hard. LaVine, Lonzo. I don't know if Caruso's in there, but basically they're just saying, we're just going to go all out with our stars to try to, we're not going to like, you know, work on the Lakers and save minutes for the playoffs. We're just got to get to the postseason. I kind of like the strategy. What do you think?
It's a really good point. I think it's something that definitely bears watching. And, you know, I think the Bulls are under quite a bit of pressure.
Yeah.
You know, from top down to have a really good year this year. You know, the Arturis Karnišević, the GM, or this president, I guess his title is, you know, some of his moves early on weren't great. He stuck his neck out taking Patrick Williams, who was just so-so as a rookie. You know, and they were slapped in, you know, they're in this tampering investigation, which we don't know how that's going to turn out.
Wait, who's that about?
Well, there's a tampering investigation about their acquisition of Lonzo Ball.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting. I was not even aware of that.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible that they could face sanctions for it.
Come on, Lonzo Ball.
So like, yeah, I mean, like they could lose a draft pick. Oh. I mean, I'll tell you this, like, the Milwaukee Bucks were accused of tampering 2 years ago and they were barred from getting the player who happened to be Bogdan Bogdanović. They were stripped of a second round draft pick and didn't really slow them down because they won the championship.
They kind of lucked into it, but let's not go there. One more thing on the Bulls, Brian.
Yeah, in the case of the Bulls, real quick, they got the player who's Lonzo Ball.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, if you look at the scale, they could be facing a penalty if they're found guilty.
Yeah, interesting. Looking back at that draft, man, if they had gotten Halliburton, that would have been massive. But then they probably don't end up getting Lonzo and Caruso. On the Bulls, as one of the marquee markets for TV, not having a good Bulls team for like 5 years and a good Knicks team for like, I don't know, 10, has kind of hurt the league. Would you agree with that? I mean, having the Bulls be a draw right now and watchable, you can actually put them on television. I think that's got to be a boost to the league, right?
Yeah, although the TV ratings aren't doing great.
Yeah, they're not.
No, I mean, you know, for a long time, before LeBron came back, the Lakers had missed the playoffs for like 6 straight years. And the Knicks had missed the playoffs for like 6 straight years. And the Bulls had missed the playoffs for 3 or 4 straight years. And, you know, I mean, the Warriors were, you know, definitely the class of the league in terms of holding up the ratings then. But like, you know, if the top three markets aren't engaging their local fans with great teams, the NBA cannot be, you know, cannot be as strong as it can be as a whole.
Yeah.
And that's just the truth. And I say that as somebody from Cleveland. You know, I'm well aware of what it's like to be in the mid market or small market. And, you know, it definitely, you know, was an issue, held the league back. I mean, you know, for anybody that ever wants to talk about a conspiracy.
No, we hate that.
Conspiracies died the night of the lottery where the Lakers and Knicks were in the top four with the Grizzlies and Pelicans, and Ja Morant and Zion Williamson were in the lottery.
That's right. Yeah.
And if you know, I remember they went to commercial and those were the final four teams, Memphis, New Orleans, New York, and the Lakers. By the way, the Lakers getting into the top four helped them get Anthony Davis, but it's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
Every conspiracy theory you could ever have about the lottery died in that moment.
Mm.
When the Pelicans and Grizzlies got picks 1 and 2. And can you imagine Ja Morant with the Knicks right now?
That would be,
hello?
Yeah, they'd be on TV
hello?
Every night. Yeah.
I mean, and that's a sliding doors moment. What if the Lakers don't get the fourth pick? What if they get the second pick? Oof. Do they then not trade for Anthony Davis? You know, we could go on and on about what happened there.
Wow.
But it would have been better for the league if the Knicks had won that lottery.
Yeah.
I'm just going to be honest with you. I mean, I know that they're doing better right now, but they would really be doing better if they had John Morant. Yeah. So that's the way it goes. But I am happy to see the fans at the Garden really engaged again, because the Garden is one of the best places. And when the Knicks are doing well, it means that the league to a certain extent is doing
100%. Now you were the one who brought up Zion. So I will piggyback off that. Unmitigated disaster, DEFCON 1. Where do you want to go on this Zion situation? I mean, the video of him like shifting around in the and stretching in the lane where he looks like he's close to 300 pounds. This is a guy who was pegged for stardom. Like, he'll be the face of the league in 5 years. Brian, I'm not asking you to come on here and kill the Pelicans front office, but I know you're friends with Griff, and he gets a big pass in the media because he knows everybody, but I mean, I don't know how he still has a job. And I read that, I think I heard on your podcast how he got into beef in some in the tunnel with Gentry recently or something. But like, this is...
That was just a funny story. Oh, that was I don't funny think that story. Should cost anybody their job. That's just a funny story.
This has to be one of the low points in the franchise. You wonder, are they even long for staying in New Orleans at this point?
Yeah, they are, because their owner, Gail Benson, who has no heirs, she announced that she's going to give... When she passes away, she's in her 70s, but she's healthy.
Okay.
She owns the Saints too. And she announced that when she passes away, that the Saints and the Pelicans are going to be sold and the profits will go to the city.
Hmm.
So she basically announced, I mean, who knows that hopefully she lives another couple of decades and the Saints and Pelicans together are worth $7 billion. I don't know. Today they would probably be worth about $5 billion. Yeah.
Well, they haven't gone into tax. The Lonzo situation.
Never. There's only two NBA teams that have never gone. Actually, I think it's only one, which is the Pelicans. They've never gone into tax ever, which if you're a star player, that absolutely is on your mind. Because like I know that when LeBron was a free agent in 2014 and he was talking with teams, like that was the first thing that he said. Are you willing to go into the tax no matter what? Because he didn't want. To devote his prime years to a team that was not going to go all out. But the Zion thing, the thing that's just shocking, it's sad, but it's true. The Pelicans have given more Zion Williamson health delay updates than they have victories.
Wow.
They've given like four of them. They have two wins as of right now.
Oh my gosh.
He's still not close to playing. And, you know, Griff and the Pelicans really botched the public relations of this because they didn't announce that he was hurt. They didn't announce he had surgery. I mean, that happens. I mean, Tom Brady comes back from the offseason and says, oh yeah, by the way, I had knee surgery. Chris Paul comes back, and he says in an interview, by the way, I had wrist surgery a few weeks ago. You know, star players get star treatment. I would argue that for these companies that are now neck deep in involved with gambling, that's a completely terrible way to run a business.
Oh yeah.
Because obviously many people do know that he's had surgery and that he would be out. And there were lines out there for the Pelicans that with their win over and under, where people knew he had surgery. And the NBA is saying, come bet with us. Come fans, come watch our games, wager, stay with us. But wait a minute, you're not being honest with injury information. Yeah. Like I'm not saying that they have to say when a player broke up with his girlfriend or whatever, but you know, if a guy has surgery, I think that should be, I think in this day and age where you're in business with the gambling companies, you should announce that, but I digress.
Do you think?
the Pelicans elected not to announce that. And they did that as a nod to Zion's request for privacy. And look, you got to keep your star happy before anything else. I just talked about how you got to keep the engine well oiled.
Yeah.
I get it. But when you do that, you make the decision to hurt your credibility with your fan base. And then they came out there, and then the exact same day that they slapped the fans across the face and said, hey, listen, Zion was out all summer because he broke his foot and had surgery. I mean, if you're a Pelicans fan, you're like, what? And they're like, but don't worry, he's going to be back for opening night. And then Zion comes up. Zion gives his one interview he's given in the last, I don't know, he's given one interview in the last like 6 months.
Wow, that's it?
Oh, yeah, I'll be back. Again, the NBA, the NBA, the players are supposed to talk to the media. And again, if they don't talk to the media because the media, boy, we really need today's clicks. They do that so that it engages the fans and that they can hear from Zion how he's doing. And they don't have to rely on video clips or, unnamed sources. But again, the NBA is like, you can do whatever you want, guys. You don't want to talk to the media. We don't care. We don't care if our television ratings are down. We're not going to talk to the media. Screw them. You know, LeBron's been out for 2 weeks. Don't talk to the media. Who wants to hear from him?
Yeah.
Again, it's bad business, but what do I know? I'm just a little guy. But
sure, bro.
So they come out and they do that. And so then not only is he not back for opening night, he's not back 2 weeks in.
Yeah.
They give another update. Still not back. 2 more weeks. They give another update. Still not back. 2 more weeks. We're 6 weeks into the season almost now. Mm. And they've given 3 updates just since opening night. Not training camp, opening night. And all that updates is that Zion is, inching back. And like, if you're a Pelicans fan, you have, Dave Griffin and Zion have lost credibility with you. And look, he comes back and scores a couple of 30-point games. He'll get it back. And I'm sure that's what they believe. And that's sure that's true. But I'm a huge believer in Zion's talent. I mean, I know that's not exactly a hot take, but he's one of the most breathtaking athletes I've ever covered. I've ever seen in the NBA.
Well, we bring you on for the thoughtfulness, and we'll wrap up with this, Brian. Our podcast is obviously biggest in LA because I moved out here, and the Lakers have been kind of up and down. And if I'm going to put you on the spot, if you are the GM of the Lakers and they say you can rewind time and go back to the offseason, and instead of getting Russell Westbrook, you could have gotten Buddy Hield, or if you even want to toss it out there, DeMar DeRozan, what would you, Brian Windhorst, have done? You've watched a lot of NBA. You've written books, podcasts, everything. What would you have done?
Well, the Lakers had, they had sort of 4 pieces that they could use in trade. They had, I'll go so far as to say they had 5.
Okay.
They had Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, didn't have the greatest year last year, but plays 3-and-D championship experience. They had Kyle Kuzma, who is starting a reasonable contract. Again, a good multi-dimensional player. They had Montrezl Harrell going into the final year of his contract. Again, didn't have the greatest year last year, but has value. They had Alex Caruso, who was a free agent, but they had his full rights, so they could have signed and traded him. And they had their first-round draft pick. They had those 5 things. They could have elected to hold on to all 5, hold on to the guys they had under contract, make the draft pick, and re-sign Alex Caruso, or they could have broken them into pieces and said, we're going to keep 2 of them and trade 2 of them, or we're going to trade 2 of them here and 2 of them over there. Instead, they traded 4 of them for Westbrook. They would only need to trade 2 of them for Buddy Hield. That's the one thing people look at and say, Westbrook versus Hield. That's not accurate.
It's even better than that.
They could have traded for Buddy Hield and still had the other 3 things.
So you're telling me, is Caruso one of the 3 things they could have had?
Well, yeah, I mean, you either could have re-signed him, which he wanted to do.
Yeah.
And then you'd still have him. And then you'd either have him to play or have him to trade. And like, here's the thing, like, even after, even if you had traded the other 2 guys and, the other 4 guys and you just want to let Caruso walk, what you could have done was signed and traded him to Chicago. And that would have cost you something. Chicago didn't need to do that to get him. You might have had to use a 2nd round pick to get a trade exception back. But if you did that, then you'd have a $9 million trade exception that you could use. They just didn't do any of that.
Oh, okay. So I stop you there for a sec? Yeah. Do you think this was front office related, or was this LeBron related?
No, without question, LeBron and Anthony Davis said, we want Westbrook.
Oh.
And you have to go, I have to respect that decision.
Well, you have to respect it, but do you have to do it?
Yeah, you do.
Oh, damn.
You have to go with what LeBron supports.
Yeah.
And if you go down riding with LeBron, that's the way you have to go down.
Yeah.
And I will say this, it hasn't started well, But like, how can I not give the respect to AD and LeBron to believe that they can't put it together and figure it out by the end? Would I wager on that happening? No. But how can I not respect them? That's what, you know, and the other thing is, you know, despite the fact that they are one of the richest in terms of generating revenue teams in sports, they have a budget. They are not like, you know, the Clippers, who don't have a budget. They are not owned by somebody worth $100 billion. Mm. They are owned by the descendants of Jerry Buss, the six family members and a couple other minority owners. They can't operate in the red.
Okay. But if LeBron wants you to operate in the red, do you operate in the red?
I mean, obviously to a certain extent, they're paying the luxury tax,
right?
But they have a payroll that's lower than the Bucks and the Jazz.
Interesting. So I don't know. I look at the makeup of this team, and even when they're healthy, when Kendrick Nunn is back and, you know, THT is working his way in, which is kind of funny, Brian, you have to admit. We're like talking about the Lakers and these stars, and they're like, well, Nunn and THT aren't fully back yet. You know, it's like, okay, right. They're not even all-stars. Right. But I don't see how Frank Vogel handles this down the stretch, because, Brian, you and I both know they can't play Westbrook, LeBron, and AD down the stretch in meaningful playoff games. That's not going to work.
Well, I would say that the last 15 years, the teams that LeBron has been on have devoted incredible amounts of resources and creativity to find players who can make space for LeBron and shoot, to get out of his way and shoot so that he can go to work and have that support. They have basically tried to find players who are the opposite of Westbrook. And the team that they won the championship with 2 years ago cleared the space out for him and received passes and shot threes. Mm-hmm. And that is the inverse of the type of player that you want, that a guy like Buddy Hield and Alex Caruso are the exact prototypes of players that you've wanted. The all those finals teams that he was on had players like that. So going for Westbrook is an inverse of the strategy that has made this, had him on 10 finals teams.
But I also
have to respect, Jason, that he's sitting in front of me saying, I need somebody else to take the burden to hold the ball and create the offense so that I can save myself, because I'm 37 years old and I can save myself. If he says that to me, holding his rings and MVPs and gold medals and everything, I have to respect it. Even if I don't think it makes sense necessarily, I have to respect what he's saying.
Is he trying to thread the needle? Is LeBron saying, hey, we need Russ? You know why? Because I'm going to probably miss 20, 25 games. AD's probably going to miss 15, 20, 25 games. We need someone to carry us through the dog days of January and February. We will be fine come playoffs. But Brian, but then the question becomes, what happens in those final 5 minutes of games 4, 5, 6, 7? Can you just tell Russ, hey, Russ, we're going to sit you down. We need shooters on the floor. Like, how's he going to handle that? How's Vogel going to navigate that? I don't know that LeBron fully thought that through.
Stay tuned. I mean, I'll tell you what. I've seen LeBron do some stuff, man.
Name one awesome thing that LeBron's done that's proven he can do this. He can tell Russell Westbrook, hey, dude, you got to just chill out and sit out.
I mean, at the end of playoff games, the ball's going to be in LeBron's hands. And if it's not, it'll be a problem. I think Russ knew that when he came. I really do. I think in Russ's position, I mean, Russ really, really wanted it, man, because like the Lakers were about to do this other deal. And listening to DeRozan gave an interview to Yahoo Sports this week where he said that he thought he was going to go to the Lakers too.
Mm.
And so, you know, here's DeRozan and here's Buddy Hield, and they're thinking about being Lakers. Trying to think who else recently gave an interview where he talked about thinking he was going to be a Laker.
Wow.
All these guys thought they were going to be Lakers, right? And Russ is like,
I got it.
Actually, I want to be a Laker.
Yeah. So I read the story about LeBron sat down with him in LA.
Doesn't come do it without knowing that was possibly going to happen at the end of the season.
Again, this is probably calling for speculation. I'd get yelled at in the courtroom. But do you think that the front office was working on DeRozan heel deals and then Russ said, hey, I want to be there? And then LeBron and AD are like, oh yeah, we got to take that guy.
Well, according to DeRozan, his agent was working on it. I don't know where DeMar wasn't a priority for the Lakers. He just said his agent was working on it. But obviously, Russ knew that there was only so many chairs before the music stopped.
Yeah. And he was stuck in what city before this? I've forgotten. He's been on so many teams, I've forgotten.
He was on your Washington Wizards.
Ah, right? Yes. I'm sure, loving life out there.
Yeah.
All right, Brian Windhorst, sorry to keep you so long. Great stuff as always. New York Times bestselling author, podcaster, TV guy. I mean, you go on PTI. You go on every show, right? Yeah, basically at the network.
Not during football season, man. Like, until the Super Bowl, they'll remember that there's basketball after the Super Bowl.
Okay.
But, you know, right now, I'm on the NBA Today in my podcast, and I cover some games. And just take it easy and let the football carry the ball for the time being.
Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot, Brian. Happy holidays, and talk to you soon.
You too.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live. The only thing better than sitting on your couch watching the game is making money while you do it. Here's your best bet.
Great stuff from Brian Windhorst. Really a nice guy, an informed NBA opinionist, and he's thoughtful. Really good stuff. I really enjoyed it. Brian Windhorst, good dude. All right, let's get to the best bet here on Straight Fire. I probably should have been keeping track throughout the season of how we've done. I feel like, I don't want to eyeball it and say like 58%, but it's been more hits than misses, that's for sure. Mondays was a great example of when the game is gross and everybody's on one side and you do not want the other side, take the other side. And that applies tonight. Yes, you got to bet the Atlanta Falcons getting 7 at home against the New England Patriots. I know I've gone against the Patriots a bunch this season. It has not gone well, namely Carolina. I like Cleveland against them last week. Mac Jones is ascending. But if you're buying the Patriots, a rookie quarterback laying 7 on the road, you're buying at the top of the market. And that's like the worst time to buy. And all week, all we've heard, what are the narratives out there right now? Watch out for the Patriots. Boy, they're dangerous. That was mine last week. This week, mainstream. Patriots, oh my God, Mac Jones, rookie of the year. Look out for the Patriots. They could win the AFC. That's how good they are right now. Folks, they got a rookie quarterback going on the road. Now, I know that some things line up here to go against the Falcons. Rookie quarterback, Thursday Night Football. I'm sorry, rookie coach, Thursday Night Football. That is usually a toxic mix. We are late in the season. Cordarrelle Patterson, we're going to find out today. He's questionable. It was looking like he was definitely out, and now he's questionable. What's Cordarrelle Patterson worth to the line? Well, I mean, he's worth what? Maybe half a point? A quarter of a point? We're talking about Cordarrelle friggin' Patterson. Like, settle down. We saw last week where you can just plug in guys. Alvin Kamara did not play for the Saints. They just plug and chug and covered the spread against Tennessee, which was had the best record in the AFC. Like, running backs, whatever, it's not a big deal. Now, are the Falcons good? No, they're not. Somehow they're still in the mix for the playoffs. Is there a scenario where Belichick comes out and this is 30-0? Of course. Yeah, that feels like you have to exist that every week with Bill Belichick. He's that good. I saw a stat where Mac Jones is the quarterback who's completed the most passes to running backs. They're just keeping it safe. Atlanta's defense is not great. There is nothing about this team to like. That being said, I'm going to have to take a touchdown on Thursday Night Football in Atlanta. Now, this is not a big play for me. Going against Bill Belichick long-term is not positive for your bankroll, but I would suspect that the Falcons, who basically took the fourth quarter off because they were getting beat so bad by Dallas, they will not play that poorly. Are they going to play as great as they did the week prior against New Orleans? No, that was a divisional opponent. The familiarity was there, but they played out of their minds. They dominated that game for three quarters and then held on. I don't foresee Alabama winning. I'm sorry, Alabama. Atlanta winning outright, but I have to take the 7. I think just on principle. Remember, this line was New England minus 2.5. Early in the year, they set out lines for all the games. Has your opinion changed that much of both of these teams that it should go through the 3 and through the 7? Like, that to me is insane. If you want to tease at New England down, that's great. There are many great teaser leg opportunities out there. I mean, you don't want to. If you feel good about Buffalo, you tease them down. You tease New England. You know, I don't know how you guys feel about the Chargers. That line keeps moving up against the Steelers. Sounds like there are issues within Pittsburgh, and Big Ben may not be ready to go. Six is a lot for Justin Herbert to lay. Let's see what's up with TJ Watt, though. If TJ Watt doesn't play, you know, if he plays, obviously it's a problem for Herbert, even though the Chargers' O-line has been great. But there are teaser leg options. But overall, you know, you want to bite the bullet. I'm not saying put down $500 on the Atlanta Falcons getting seven. You make an action play, maybe start Cord Patterson in fantasy like I am, and hope for the best. All right, guys, we'll talk to you tomorrow.